Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm very excited because I have a new friend that was introduced to me from Jamie Todek, who was a guest previously. I can't remember what number. I think she's like 75 or 74, right in the mid-70s. And already, my new friend is here with us today to talk to us about something fun and exciting that we haven't had on the show before. She's going to talk to us about organic mushroom growing. So welcome to the show, Tess Brzezinski.
Hi, Jackie. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks, Tess. We're so glad to have you. So go ahead and tell listeners a little bit about yourself.
All right. My name is Tess Brzezinski. I'm 24 years old, and I attend Wayne State University. That's in downtown Detroit in Michigan. I will be graduating with a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Science. Ooh, so excellent. Organic gardening is definitely right up my alley of interest. I'm definitely a fungi enthusiast. I love mushrooms. I grew up with them. And there's a lot of fascinating things about them that a lot of people don't know. So I try to share them, you know, share that information with people, the environmental impacts as well as health benefits from them. And that's that.
Excellent. I think that's going to be fun to hear about today. And I love mushrooms. So I do always like to kind of start the show talking about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, tell us about the very first time you dug in the dirt or grew a fungi.
Well, I would have to say my first gardening experience, it definitely was alongside my mother all my life. She was always planting herbs. I can still remember outside of our house on the back patio there, she would grow mint. And while she would be making dinner, she would have us go pick her some mint to add to the meal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, always in the dirt, digging up worms, planting flowers around the house. So yeah, it definitely goes back to a young age.
Excellent. Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters.
Oh,
and I think I'm kind of the one that, you know, stuck to the gardening. Mm-hmm. It really influenced me as a child.
Okay, cool. So do you want to tell us what like organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening means to you?
Sure. When I think of organic gardening, I think green. I think steer clear of synthetic products, pesticides, and other fertilizers, and just to grow from natural design.
Perfect.
And in terms of mushroom growing, you know, using organic media.
Do you want to explain to listeners what organic media is?
Sure.
Do you mean like, are you talking about like the dirt or the soil that you grow it in?
See, there's different ways to grow mushrooms. Some grow well on logs, so you want to make sure your logs aren't diseased or have been used, you know, in any unnatural way. Other mushrooms can be grown on sawdust, you know, so you want to make sure where you're collecting your sawdust from, they haven't put any synthetic products on the wood and stuff like that.
So who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
I think what inspired me to grow organically would be probably just the famous quote of "you are what you eat." And I like to stay healthy. My mother actually was diagnosed with breast cancer about 5 years ago. She's all good now. So it's a great thing. So I just want to, you know, kind of make sure she's eating healthy and we're all eating healthy. You know, keeping our bodies clean. That way we can feel great.
Mm-hmm. And then I just have to, so what inspired you to go into environmental studies? Because, you know, when I, like, before I moved to Missoula, when I was already, like, a junior in college, I didn't even know there was such a thing as environmental studies.
Yeah, it's definitely, something that has just, you know, been brought up in the past 15 years or so, I think. Yeah. And people are becoming more aware of it because I think we have to. Mm-hmm. The way that we mass produce and the wastefulness of just humanity, I think it's something people need to start concentrating on. You know, we have to remember that our planet is here for us, but it's also, it's a resource. So we have to make sure we are conscious of how much we are using. And I've always been in tune to the earth, mm-hmm. since a child, and I think it's something, a field that people, it's a rare field to go into. So I feel like not as many people are going into this field, mm-hmm. or really even think about, you know, the wastefulness, or, you know, what we are even doing. You know, when we buy plastic water bottles and throw them in the trash. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I want to take care of our planet.
Me too. Well, I'm glad you're here to share your knowledge with us today. And I'm so glad you're getting that degree, and that's going to be a good thing. So hopefully you'll inspire some other listeners maybe to think about that if they're headed to college or know someone who's headed to college that's wondering, what can I do? And there's a great environmental studies program out here in Montana at the University of Montana, you know. That was where I first heard about it, was down there. I had some friends in the program.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how did you learn how to garden organically or grow mushrooms, even just in general?
Basically just by my own research, checking out books at the library, watching tutorial videos online. Paul Stamets is a renowned mycologist out in Washington State. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much from him. His book, Growing Gourmet and Medicinal Mushrooms, has helped me a lot. So I owe all my knowledge basically to Paul Stamets.
So, well, tell us a little more about growing the mushrooms. Like, how do you start? Like, you talked a little bit about some grow in logs, some grow in sawdust. Well, what type of mushrooms do you grow to begin with? Like, are you growing the white ones that we generally see in the stores? Or we have, like, wild morels out here that we pick a lot, and shaggy manes, and...
Oh, yeah.
There's one other kind, but what kind are you growing?
Well, I will talk about growing on logs for today. Okay. I think that'll be a good place to start. Okay. I am growing shiitake and oyster mushrooms, blue oysters and pearl oysters. And you want to start off collecting your logs, and they should be cut down in the fall season. That's a good time because the moisture is heavy in the trees, and you don't want a log older than 6 months old. So if it's been cut down and laying around for over 6 months, it's probably won't be as efficient. So you want to get your plug spawn, which plug spawn is basically like a dual rod, and it's inoculated with mycelia. And that is what will start the mushrooms to grow. So you can get that from certain sources, organic sources, fungi.com is Paul Stamets' website, which I highly recommend. And you want to drill holes about 50 per log. The log should be about 3 to 4 feet, and, you know, the diameter of like 6 to 8 inches or so.
No,
and you'll.
Does it
sorry,
matter what kind of tree you're using? Well, any kind of tree? Are you doing hardwood, softwood, or, you know?
Yes, it depends on the type of mushroom you're growing. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a great point. Most mushrooms, like hardwoods, beech trees, oak trees, maple. So I'm growing my mushrooms on oak. So yeah, you definitely have to consider that the softwoods are more so of like turkey tail mushrooms or chicken of the woods. But yeah, mainly hardwood. So yeah, then you get a drill bit, about 5/8, and just drill holes, you know, evenly spaced around the log. And
do you drill the hole all the way through the rod so like you can see the ground underneath it, or just drill a hole like an inch deeper?
No, about 1 1/4 inch, I'd say.
Okay.
So yeah, you do not want to drill all the way through, just like about an inch or so in.
Okay.
Oh, and the drill bit's 5/16. Wanted to reassure that. Yep, so about 50 holes per log. That'll be for a good flush.
Is that like a crop?
A flush? Yeah, well, that's what they describe, you know, the fruiting bodies when the mushrooms, you know, start growing. So, okay. You know, like you harvest, if you were to talk about plants, you know, your crops, usually for mushrooms is described as a flush.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then so you insert the plug spawn, and it's not necessary, but it's good to keep them sterile to get cheese wax and melt it, and then kind of with a clean paintbrush, just cover that part, the hole, so that way, you know, bugs and stuff can't get in there.
Oh,
that'll seal it up. Yeah, it'll seal it up nice. And it's good to keep in mind that it takes about 9 to 12 months for the log to get colonized by the mycelium.
9 months?
Yeah, so you won't receive a flush probably until, like a year from the time that you do it.
Oh, okay. Now, where do you keep it? Do you have to keep it somewhere moist or dry or warm? Or what do you do with it in the winter?
A good spot is like a damp area and like a wooded, you know, a forest. And if you don't have access to that, you know, like in your backyard, like you can cover it with, I forget the name. You can cover it with like, you know, some sort of cloth. You know, heavy duty cloth, and keep the moisture content right with like a sprinkler system or so, or misting it. You know, every week or so. But yeah, if you don't have a forest area, you can leave it, you know, close to the ground, you know, probably under a tree or so.
But didn't you say you're in Detroit? Are you growing them in your backyard?
Yeah, so on the campus, we have a garden club, and it's right outside of our undergraduate library, and there's a nice area there that has a few trees and some mulch, and that's where we keep them. You know, it's not a forest, definitely not, but it's a shaded area, and, you know, they're fine there. You know, they can manage. You know, just we keep it damp, and the trees provide good shade.
That's awesome. I think that's one of the nicest things about colleges is they usually have pretty nice campuses with green areas that you can hang out with.
Yeah.
Usually a quad or something. It's always fun to go hang out in the quad.
Right. Definitely.
Okay. Anything else do you want to tell us about the mushrooms?
Let's see here. About cultivation, I think we covered just about, you know, what beginners should know. Just remember to keep the size of the logs manageable. You want to be able to move them around. So about 3 to 4 feet is a good size. And get your plug spawn from a good source, an organic source. Yeah, it's a simple process. It really is. You know, people are probably surprised of how simple this can be.
I went on this farm tour at this place called the Purple Frog Farm down in Whitefish the other day, and she was talking about she's going to start growing mushrooms. They had like this new area that they were about to start cultivating mushrooms, I think, and she made it sound pretty fun.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. Yeah, and rewarding as well, as all gardening is, I think.
Okay. Well, then, do you want to talk about your regular garden? Do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
Sure. Let's see. My herbs always do well. So good. Awesome. The tomatoes, well, I'll talk about that after. My peppers are doing amazing. I grow cayenne and jalapeno peppers, and they're just, that was probably my best crop. Definitely the peppers. The tomatoes did not do so well this year. I think it's because here in Michigan, it took a while for summer to come. It stayed cool for quite a bit. And tomatoes are a tropical plant. So, you know, they love the heat. So they're just finally starting to turn. And I definitely made a ton of fried green tomatoes. I can say that.
Oh, cool.
They were just green for months.
When's your first frost then? Is it coming soon? Like, we're due any day. We already even had a little frost. As a matter of fact, my husband said the cantaloupes and the watermelons died the other night.
Oh, my goodness. Already? I did not know that. I did not know that about Montana.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're right on the Rocky Mountains, so.
Yeah, so yeah.
It can get pretty cold at night.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I didn't think it got that cold, but, you know, watermelons and cantaloupes grown. We usually don't even try those, and we got some new seeds from this place that are supposed to be for, you know, super cold areas. So we tried them. So my husband picked a watermelon the other day we were going to try to cut into, but I don't think it's still in the fridge, so we haven't tried to cut into it yet. But, I don't know if it's going to make it or not, but yeah, we haven't had many tomatoes ripe yet. I think lots of cherry tomatoes, but I don't think we have any big ones ripe yet.
Right. Yeah. It's taken a while.
They're tough. And we were on the other end of the spectrum. We had an early spring and summer this year. Very early.
Oh.
Super hot. June, we had 100 degree days, which is unheard of. Totally unprecedented.
Oh my
Never
goodness.
Before have we had 100 degree days in June.
Wow.
But now, I mean, the last 3 days have been like three of the most gorgeous days you could ever ask for. So.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm curious more about the peppers. What do you think worked so good that the cayenne and jalapeno peppers did so wonderful?
I don't really know. Maybe the coolness. I haven't done much research. I have just been just excited. I made jalapeno poppers.
Oh, you did?
For the first time. They came out really well.
Were they hard to make?
I wouldn't say hard, but it's a process. You know, you have to gut the inside and then stuff them with the cream cheese. I use cream cheese and then the breading, you know. And so it's a long process, but they're so good. So it makes it worth it.
I'll bet homemade ones are really good.
Right? They're not like frozen for months. But yeah, and I'm also drying my cayenne pepper to make homemade hot pepper flakes. Mm-hmm. So crushed red pepper flakes. I'm very excited about that.
What do you like to put those in? Anything in particular?
Pretty much anything I eat is a vehicle to put on hot peppers on. I love the hotness. So just about anything.
Cool. You know what else I was going to ask you? So what herbs do you have that are growing?
Oh, okay.
You said herbs always do well. What herbs are you growing?
I have lavender, sage, thyme, lemon balm, basil, my dill. I didn't replant my dill this season, but I used to have dill. Let's see.
Our dill usually comes back. Does your dill not just come back?
I think, is it a perennial? It must have died because I used to grow it for my neighbor who makes pickles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we would trade off. I'd give him dill and he'd bring me a jar of his pickles, which they're fabulous.
Nice.
But I think that's it.
I don't think it's a perennial, but I just think, well, probably what we do is we let it go to seed and then the seeds scatter. So it comes up in all sorts of different places every year is what happens.
Yeah. And I have chamomile as well.
Our dill. Our problem was the cucumbers were so early that the dill wasn't. Well, we had picked a bunch of dill, you know, trying to get it out like a weed almost. Like it was growing where we didn't want it to grow. And I kind of regret that. And I should have just let it go.
I see.
And then when we needed the dill for the pickles, the places I had left it weren't ready and wasn't ripe yet. So we had some cucumbers that didn't quite make it to the pickle stage before. And then I couldn't find any anywhere. Now I'm seeing it in the store, but we certainly got lots of pickles this year. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah.
It's all a learning experience.
Yep. Always learning. I learned a ton this year. So,
yeah, it's like when you think you know, there's not any more like to know, you know, that's just definitely a false statement because, you know, you learn every day just from like being out there and different little things. Oh, I would like to talk about something actually that I had never heard of. My corn, something was eating it. So I put a cage around it, some chicken fencing, and, you know, I thought maybe it was a rabbit or something small because, like, as soon as they were getting, as soon as the plant was getting about 3 feet, I'd say, 2 to 3 feet, it would look like something just, like, nibbled off the bottom and it would just was left there. So I'm thinking, well, I don't know, why wouldn't the animal eat the rest of it? And I read up on this problem and I found out it was cutworms. Have you ever heard of them?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And that made the most sense. And I, you know, so that's probably why the fence didn't work because it wasn't an animal, you know, it was the cutworm. So unfortunately, it took me a while to find out about that. I didn't get to save any of the corn. They say, you know, you can put like a toilet paper roll, like the in the cardboard inside, mm-hmm. like around it. That might, you know, help it. But so that's something I learned.
Okay, well, that's good to know for listeners that that's something they can try. Yes. So, usually I would say, is there something that you're excited to try different or new next year that you haven't done before?
Just, I think with the mushrooms, I would like to expand, on different species. I would like to grow, you know, many different, kinds. And also, in the garden club there at Wayne State, I want to try, a mushroom bed. So that's basically, like growing a mushroom patch. So you can, you want to build a bed, you know, above ground and fill it, you know, with hardwood chips and sawdust.
Oh.
And then you just put the spawn all around it and it will grow like a little mushroom patch. So I'm going to do a little more research on that and try to get that going in the spring
of
2016. Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll check back with you in the spring of 2017 and see how those are growing.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. So we'll probably, do you want to use the corn for the something that didn't work so well this season, or did you have something else planned for that question?
Yeah, I'd say the corn. Okay. I was so excited for it too.
Corn's a tough one to grow.
Yeah, and in the past year, I never had this issue, so I don't know where they came from.
I don't know where they come from either. but I've definitely heard of them doing that, and just, yeah, they get down there in the bottom, and you're like, what happened?
Right, and it's just the oddest thing, because you just see the, you know, the, mm-hmm. the stalk just lying there. You know, it's like, what is going on?
How about something that you find is easy to grow and successful every time, generally?
Let's see. Herbs. They're great. A lot of them just come back. I don't even have to do anything. Mm-hmm. They're just there always. Yeah, it's a little difficult, though, like with chamomile. It spreads everywhere, so I'll be finding it while I'm harvesting some tomatoes over on the other side of the garden. I'm like, well, wow. You know, it just spreads like wildfire, but it's amazing, though, what, you know, all the uses you can do with it, you know, for teas and salves. So I don't mind it too much. But yeah, I'd say my herbs, they always do wonderful.
My big one that spreads all over is oregano. I have oregano everywhere.
Oh, I do have oregano as well. I forgot to mention that. I forget, you know, after naming off seven or so, it's like, what else is in there?
Mm-hmm. I know, me too. And then sometimes I forget what they are when I'm down there. I'm like, what's this one again?
Oh, I was going to ask you if during the cold season, do you bring or do you have indoor herbs?
So I just keep my basil on my windowsill because of our frost thing, I've lost so much basil in the past that I don't really grow it outside. I know lots of people do in Montana, but I just keep one or two plants on my window all winter long and all summer long, and I'm just always picking fresh basil leaves.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, you just have it in a pot there then. And that's great.
My mom has talked about bringing rosemary in. She said that she used to bring her rosemary in all the time, and she's in New York, but she said she leaves it out a lot too. And I have rosemary and I've just always kept it out in the garden. I've never brought it in or anything. I just keep it out in my herb garden and it comes back. So
yeah.
But I have like sage and some thyme down there and then just mostly oregano. That's really, and they just come back every year. I don't plant them or do. And the other thing I like about herbs is you don't really have to water them that much, you know, in the hot of August, but for the most part, they are really hardy. And
yes,
really
they
well
are.
For especially Montana, such a dry climate. So I like them that way. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
I don't know because I really have everything has done well. I
like that answer.
Yeah.
That'll inspire gardeners.
Yeah, like that I can't even think of anything. Maybe it's perhaps I haven't gone outside of the box and tried to grow something. Oh, you know what? Pumpkins. Oh. That is one thing. I wouldn't say steer away. I would say, you know, before you plant your pumpkins, find an area, maybe like on a hillside or if you have like a ledge or something you can do with them. But yeah, I think pumpkins is a little difficult. Do a little research before choosing where to plant them.
And that's because they get so big and spread, right?
Yeah, they and their the vines are huge as well. Take up a lot of space.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The plant itself.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
One of my guests said, now make sure the most important thing you do is at the end of the year, you take pictures of everything, because when you're in the spring and you're thinking, oh, I have so much room, this bed's so big and there's tons of space, and then it grows and it's really crowded. And I know we're having that problem. Like you can hardly walk between the rows and this little mini farm my husband planted this year. The cucumbers have just spread everywhere and the squash, and it's very hard to walk in between the rows.
That's a good idea to take a picture. I'm going to use that advice. Yeah. Also, I'm not sure if has anyone ever talked about like rotation?
You know, very little. If you want to talk about it a little more, that would be great.
I don't know too much. I just know that it's good for the soil, for your soil, and you know, for your plants overall to rotate where you grow them. So like if you've been growing your tomatoes in the same spot every year and your corn in the same spot every year and your peppers and whatnot, it's good to switch it up, mm-hmm. switch the spot in which you're growing. So, you know, the next year maybe grow in the opposite area. And
because that helps the dirt get the different nutrients that needs. Because like if the tomatoes take the nutrients that they need out of it, then the next year the corn will get whatever nutrients it needs, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And then they also talk a lot about putting like nitrogen or fixing like cover crops, like maybe put some peas somewhere so that'll replace the nitrogen, or green beans, I think, is another good nitrogen plant, right? That adds nitrogen to the soil. Is that right? I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
But I think there's things like that you can do.
Yeah. Yep. I've heard people say nitrogen for shoots and phosphorus for, I don't want to say this wrong. So, I think it was nitrogen for roots, phosphorus for shoots. I think that's what it was. So it's a cute little thing, you know, to remind yourself, you know, how it works. But yeah, it's very good to keep high in nitrogen for certain plants. I actually worked on a hops farm, and it was very interesting over in Oregon for a little while. And they would have the sheep come in, and they would eat the bottom part of the hops, so, you know, essentially trimming it. And then they would, you know, leave their droppings, you know, as they're going through the farm. And it was like a fertilizer for, because their droppings are high in nitrogen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a good little cycle they had going on. It was very interesting.
Excellent. I like that. I like that a lot. I saw some hops down at that Purple Frog farm I went to the other day. She had hops growing all over that. She said the local brewery kind of takes care of it, and then they come and harvest all the hops to make a frog ale, because her farm is called Purple Frog Farm, so they have some kind of frog ale that they sell there. It was cute.
That's awesome.
But yeah, yeah. So it was the first time I'd really seen hops. We've kind of have a very small hops, I don't know what you call it, bush or vine or something growing on our fence.
It's a climber. So yeah, it grows you know, usually on a rope or something.
Mm-hmm. So it was neat.
Yeah,
to
that's
see
cool.
That. Yeah, she had ropes strung up all over. Her place was huge. I just thought, oh my goodness, how do you take care of all this?
Oh yeah, it's a job for sure.
Well, you know, I thought what my husband did this year, and I was like, this is like 8 of these or 10 of these or something. Yeah. I can't even imagine. And the other thing I couldn't think is, what do they use for water? Because our well is run dry already this year, just trying to water our little mini farm.
Oh, yep.
So he said we have to build like some kind of holding pond. So it's going to be our project maybe next summer.
Oh, that's very cool. I'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah. This guest of mine, actually, Joyce Pinchon, out in Appalachia in Kentucky, told me to buy this book called The Market Farmer. And I had bought that book, and he saw it in there. And he opened up the page to me one day, and he's like, see, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm talking about right here in the book. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and, very cool.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. And how cool to have a pond on our property. We've always wanted water.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah, we'll go from having no water. We had no running water for 6 years, and then we've had a very shallow well for the last 10, almost 15. And then just a year or two ago, we finally sunk a deep one, 560 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
This dry summer ran it dry and our old well. It seemed like every other day one was dry.
Yeah, the well running dry.
But we made it, so, and everything grew really well. So it's all right.
Good.
All right, Tess, so which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything you got to just force yourself to get out there and do?
I would have to say weeding. I mean, it's kind of meditative in a way, you know, just to be out there and in the dirt. I find it meditating, but they've been popping up so much lately with all the rain we've been getting, and it's just like, oh, not again, you know? So... But, you know, I find it meditative as well, so try to find the good in it.
Mm-hmm. I can handle so much weeding, and then I'm done for a while, and then sometimes I get back out there. But we don't get a lot of weeds. One, because of our water shortage, so we've always kind of focused on just watering right at the root bases of the plants. And then, you know, between my husband, you know, with the mulch and just, I don't know, he seems to be right on top of it. He must bend over and pick up a weed. He's really good at, like, getting right on top of them right as soon as they start to come out of the ground so they don't get away from him. And
Yeah.
He manages to keep us pretty weed free. So I was really worried this year because we did have the water, and for the first time we had like a sprinkler type of thing going, so it wasn't just watering just at the base of the roots. But it really wasn't that bad. We didn't have as many weeds as I thought. But it can be meditative, but sometimes I get a little too lost in my thoughts. And
yeah, yes, definitely. I do have some good thoughts out there, but then it's like, okay.
Sometimes I kind of like, oh, I have so much to do inside and I should be getting on it. But
yes. Yeah,
it's all good. So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do out in the garden?
Oh, I think, as a lot of people would say, the harvesting and just watching things grow and kind of looking at, you know, just the life and you know, and it reminds you just, you know, everything is alive and should be taken, you know, into consideration of just like the life all around us. And definitely watching my mushrooms start growing, it's just like amazing because I will come back 2 hours later and they've grown so much. I'm like, this is crazy. I would like to do a time lapse. I think that's something I will work on.
Fine.
But yeah, they're just so cute, mushrooms are. So I find them very cute and I just enjoy watching them grow.
So, okay, so then how does that work? Like, so you have this log, you have these holes, the mushrooms are coming out of them. Like, do you get one mushroom out of each hole or do multiple mushrooms? Or when you pick a mushroom, does another one grow? Do you have to wait a whole nother year? Like, how does that work?
Well, you know, you could have multiple, you know, mushrooms. The log essentially will cultivate all throughout. And, you know, mushrooms will pop out, you know, you can have, like, four coming out of one little hole area, you know, in that area. And, you know, sometimes just one in the other area, but, yeah, the whole log essentially colonizes. And so after you, you know, harvest your first flush, it takes, I would say a few weeks for, a new flush to come back. You can force the log into fruiting as well if you soak it for 24 hours, and that will bring the mushrooms out faster. If you need to like produce more, if you're selling them at a market or you know stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Now, how do you heart? Do you cut them with a knife, or do you just pick them with your fingers, or?
It's good to, you can, kind of at the base of them, kind of rotate it, you know, with your fingertips and, you know, it'll break off. Or also with a knife, a lot of, mushroom hunters and part of the Michigan Mushroom Hunters Club as well. And, you know, they all have their special little mushroom knife. And that's good because you don't disturb the mycelia. And mycelium is like basically kind of like the roots of the mushroom, and you know, into cutting them, slicing them is good to, you know, not to disturb, you know, or stress out that part of the mushroom.
Now, what's the Mushroom Hunters Club? Do you guys go around looking for like wild mushrooms? Like we go pick wild morels.
Yeah. Yep. So, we have public and member only forays is what they call them, in different areas. They actually just had one. A weekend hunt up in the UP, which I was not able to make it, you know, due to school and other things, but that seemed like it went well. And definitely in the springtime, morel season here in Michigan is very big.
Oh.
So, you know, we got to look out for those. You got to, you know, if you have your area, your spot, you kind of keep it to yourself. You know?
I know. You bet.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And it's so fun the first time you find your first mushroom. Like I remember like the first time I went, I can still remember the first time I went, and like I'm with these friends of ours and my husband, and all of a sudden they'll be like, oh, I got one. Oh, I got, I'm like, what are you guys looking at? What are you talking about? I'm like, where are you finding these? You know, and I'm looking at the ground and I'm scared. And they wouldn't like help me in the beginning, you know, at first they're, you know, which was really good, you know? And then finally somebody picked one like right by me and I saw what they did, and you see, you know, and then all of a sudden your eye gets accustomed to seeing those dark spots, and then you can like, then they start popping out everywhere and you're like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, there's one, there's one, there's one. And then the next thing you know, you're like, oh my God, I'm surrounded by them.
Yeah, exactly. You develop the eye for, you know, for them.
But at first, yeah, like, what are you guys looking at? How are you finding them when you're just standing there? Like, what are the, and somebody's like, I got one, I got one, I got one. And you're just lost. And then all of a sudden, yeah, you develop. It's definitely way fun. I love mushroom
picking
in the spring.
It's like a childish joy.
We're kind of thinking that might be a plus side to all the fires we had this summer, that there might be some more mushrooms next year. But
ooh, yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure a lot of our fires that were close to our house are on pretty steep ground, so I don't know that they will get much mushrooms, or it'll be a place that you can access. I think that was part of the problem with the fire. It was really hard to access it, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But those mushroom pickers, I know them. The mountains will call, and they must go.
Oh, definitely, yes.
All right. Well, Tess, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that something was just so prolific you had like tons to share with your neighbors and friends and you didn't know what to do with it all?
Yes, my peppers, even, you know, this year, every year they grow so fast, you know, faster than I can use them. So I know my neighbors I share with, you know, and that's why I'm drying them a lot too, you know, to keep them good and making different things. I'm going to work on making a hot sauce out of the cayenne.
Ooh,
so I've never made hot sauce before, so I'm going to try that this fall.
Did you find a recipe that you're going to try? I wonder how you even make hot sauce. Is that kind of...
Yeah, I'll probably look up a recipe and go from there and just kind of mess around. It seems pretty simple, you know, just some vinegar, water, you know, a little bit of garlic powder.
Oh, okay. No, I had no idea where to start. I was thinking like salsa and like mixing tomatoes in. And
ooh, that would be a good idea.
That. I don't know.
A salsa, maybe. I might try that too. I got so many tomatoes as well. So that's a good idea. Thank you.
Sure. I love making salsa, and I make a really killer guacamole.
Ooh.
A simple, easy guacamole that comes out pretty good most times. That I put my salsa in with my avocados and just some cilantro. It's actually a pretty easy recipe. I mean, basically, I just put avocados, lime, cilantro, and salsa in my food processor.
Oh, delicious.
So, yeah, it comes out really good. But avocados have been so expensive this year. I haven't really got to make a lot of guacamole.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Unfortunately, you know, that's kind of a tree we can't really grow out here. I don't think in Montana they would do well either.
Yep. Nope. One of my guests laughed at me one day. He's like, well, are you growing any avocados out there? And I was like, no, I don't think so. I was like, we tried to put a pit, and I was like going on, and he's just laughing at me. He's like, you can't grow an avocado in Montana.
Yeah.
All right. Tess, what's the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Well, I would have to say it's probably not, you know, something that people would think as advice, but I can always remember my mother telling me, as I was planting something, to always have, you know, a peaceful mind and, like, you know, happiness while you're doing it, and just, like, kind of, you know, just be joyful. And I really took that to heart. And every time I'm out in the garden, I'm planting something, you know, I just kind of, like, say a good word.
Aww.
Maybe a prayer in a way, if you know, think of it in that way, or just like kind of having a peaceful mind. And I think that's very good for plants, like just the energy connection. Mm-hmm. So
that's nice. I like that.
Yeah, I would have to say that is probably the best advice I've ever received.
Cool. Have you ever entered a fair?
No, I haven't, but we plan in the garden club at Wayne State. We plan on selling the mushrooms come spring when they spring or next fall when they start to flush, to sell them at our farmer's market at school. Mm-hmm. So that'll be very, very fun and something to look forward to and see, you know, how well it does and, you know, see the people that actually like mushrooms. Some people, you know, can't stand them. Other people love them. I think it's like a love-hate thing. You know, you either love them or you hate them.
So you have a farmer's market on your campus?
Yeah. Every Wednesday, like it's 11 to 4. It's really cool. We set up in front
11 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
How many people go to your university?
Pardon?
Is it a big university? How many people go to your university?
I really don't know the count on the top of my head, but it's a pretty big university.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it's nice. And, you know, some people sell out of stuff and, you know, close early.
How many vendors do you get about? Like 20 or 5 or 10
I'd say like 10 or so.
10 vendors? Cool.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's very cool to see it, you know, in operation and just be walking, you know, from building to building and being able to just stop by and buy some fresh organic food.
Excellent.
Especially in the city of Detroit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what cool. I was thinking. I looked really quick. It looks like there's over 25,000 students. So that is big. That is a big university.
Oh, well, thank you. Now I know.
Yeah.
25,000. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a small town. I mean, certainly bigger. Not a small town. It's like a large town. It's like a small city. I mean, a lot of cities in Montana, I don't think have that many people. Maybe.
It's, Detroit is pretty big, but the population is very small. So, you know, just there's so many vacant areas, and for the amount of people that it can hold, mm-hmm. you know, far less people are there. But it's starting to come back, which is very nice to see, and a lot of younger people moving down there, you know, for school, and just it's kind of the cool thing to do these days.
Oh, cool. Well, good.
Yeah.
Good to hear. What do you want to do when you graduate? Can I ask? I mean, you don't have to tell us. Are you a freshman, a junior, a senior?
I am like an ultra senior. You know, it's kind of taken me longer than I wanted to graduate, but I think it's not about the time. You know? Mm-hmm. Pardon?
It took me a long time to graduate too. Sorry.
Yeah, and they're pretty tough classes. You know, you got to get into the whole science of, you know, organic chemistry and the physics. It's not easy, but I will be graduating next fall, mm-hmm. and I am working on my application for the Peace Corps.
Oh, you are?
Yes, wow. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I feel if I don't do it, you know, right now in my life, I don't think I ever will, and I don't want to, you know, come 10 years and think back, oh, you know, mm-hmm. I wish I would have done that, so... It's a 27-month commitment, and I thought about it for a long time, and I think I'm ready for it.
Cool. Well, good for you. For the rest of Tessa Mai's conversation about the Peace Corps, you can download part 2 of our conversation, and it'll be there. Thanks. Anyway, we better get back to the gardening topic.
Okay, yes, let's do it.
Okay. A favorite tool that you like to use. If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Oh, difficult one.
Right?
I would say, well, with my mushroom growing, it's hard. But,
Okay, give me 2 tools.
Yeah, right. I'd have to say my knife. I have like my special little mushroom knife that I love for harvesting.
What's so it I look take like? That. Like, is it a little pocket knife or like a long?
Yeah, it's like a little pocket knife, and on the other side, and then on the other side, there's like a little brush, so you can like brush off the you know, the debris or the, you know, dirt.
Where'd you get that? It's like, is it a special mushroom brush you ordered with your mushroom kit or something?
I ordered it from Fungi Perfecti, which is Paul Stamets' line. And, you know, they sell all different kinds of stuff. And I saw I saw that knife and I had to have it.
Okay, cool.
So that's a good tool. And in my other garden, I would have to say the best tool is seeds.
I like that too. Do you have a special place you like to order your seeds from?
Heirloom seeds. And I actually, just collect my own with my herbs as well. If, you know, you can, you wait till they go to seed. And then if you just cut off that part and you hang them upside down, you know, in a dry area, put a little bag underneath and the seeds will just fall right down, which is a nice way to, you know, keep your own supply, not having to keep buying them, and you know where they're coming from, a good organic source. So
find that helpful. And then they're like locally, you know, climated or whatever, so they're more likely to grow in your area.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's a good it's a good observation.
Yeah. Excellent. I went to this seed collecting seminar. I'm trying to get the guy who did it on the show. His name's Bill McDormand. And he's the one that I think we actually got those watermelon seeds I was telling you about. And we got some really good corn from him this year that's just doing amazing. And he and his partner, Bell Star, are off on a tour right now. And they just wrote a book and they're starting this big seed collecting, saving mission around the United States to get people to save seeds because we have lost our seeds. And that's the biggest thing we need to do is start collecting our seeds and encouraging people to share seeds and trade seeds. And so that's wonderful. Yeah, I'll put
that sounds like a great seminar
thing in the show notes. And so I'll send it to you so you can check into it, because yeah, if you're saving seeds, that's great.
Thank you very much. Savers.
Yeah. How about, got any tips for eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? Because once again, I'm in the middle, like I was telling you, I was cooking my eggplant parmesan. And once again, I have a refrigerator full of eggplant. It's not really enough to take anywhere. I've given some to some friends I guess I'm not that social anymore, you know, between business and work and everything. And just the friends that I have seen are like, no more eggplants, no more squash, no more cucumbers. And so then I have this pile of food. So do you have any tips for like what to do when you have an excess of food? Ever have that problem?
Well, with the harvesting, I just got like a little steered away. So did I have a problem with just having too much, is what you're mm-hmm. saying?
Too much at one time, and just how do I do, you know, because there's just me and my husband, and so, you know, I have piles of zucchinis all of a sudden. There's like, you know, 15 zucchinis here and 10 squashes and 6 eggplants and 50-something cucumbers. I mean, granted, we did plant like a mini farm. We're like trying to figure out how we can like grow enough food to create a CSA, and this was our first year, so we do kind of have a bigger crop than we've ever had before. But I seem to have this problem every year. Usually my problem is lettuce, which I haven't had any lettuce this year.
Oh, lettuce.
So just curious what people do when they have too much of something come on. And like all my broccoli came on at once. So then I was like in this panic to try to freeze as much broccoli, which I'll never really complain about having too much broccoli. It kind of hit on a busy day for me.
I think depending on, you know, what it is, like freezing is a great alternative, drying or pickling. Canning, you know, my mom and I were canning some tomatoes last year, and it's great because it lasts for so long, and you just pull out a jar of, you know, your tomatoes and make some sauce out of it or what have you. And I think canning is definitely a great thing for people to get into, especially if they're, you know, a consistent gardener. It's a wonderful skill, mm-hmm. you know, with beans and it's all different kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So then the next question is, do you have any secrets for preserving food or making it last? Do you have a special recipe you like to use for canning anything, or a special drying technique? Or how about the mushrooms? How do you preserve them?
Well, for mushrooms, I can talk a little bit about harvesting them as well, because it's a good thing to know. Once you start seeing the fruiting, you know, the fruiting bodies start to come about, you know, the mushroom itself, they're probably ready to pick in about a week, and you don't want to wait too long because, you know, they do rot pretty quick. You know, they'll just, they, you know, they don't stay fresh long. So it's good to pick them. You know, the maturity is different, you know, depending on what species you're growing. But for shiitakes, you know, the caps, once they're about like 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and you can kind of tell, you know, when the mushroom looks mature. And if you don't want to cook them up right away, they do stay good in the refrigerator for about 2 weeks. You can dry them and, you know, use them later on for soups. It's good to dry in like a food dehydrator. Also, and it's a very interesting fact, if you dry them in the sun, and if you put the gills or the undercap side up, they will absorb vitamin D from the sun. So
really?
So the content of vitamin D will be higher in the mushroom. So it's a, you know, it's a good thing to know. They are just fascinating in so many ways. So yeah, if you want to dry them, sun or like in a food dehydrator.
Now, when you put them out in the sun, do you put them on a paper towel or just lay them on a screen, or how do you dry them out?
Yeah,
in the sun?
I have a screen for my herbs, so you know, put them on a screen, and it actually like closes. I've kind of made it myself, and you know, screen is good. If you don't have a screen, some paper towel works, a paper plate or something in that, you know, in that sort. But the food dehydrator really is a blessing. I love it. Or, you know, you can even hang them, you know, if you have like a hanging device, some gardeners do. But yeah, they're great. You know, they stay good for a long time, and, you know, just throw them in a soup or a tea, you know, they'll absorb that water and like come back to life in a way. So.
Okay, that was what I was going to ask. Like, how do you rehydrate them? Do you just put them in the soup, or do you rehydrate them first? Or
you can just throw them on, you know, if you're making tea with them or putting them in soup, you know, you kind of just treat it like any other thing that's dried. You know, you can just toss them in there, and they'll, you know, they'll retain the moisture.
Okay. I know my mom, we send her dry morels a lot, and she somehow rehydrates them and cooks them. How about, do you have any special techniques for cooking any weird or unusual foods?
I love sauteing things, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I usually like to just throw the fresh shiitakes in a pan with some butter, garlic, onions, some Worcestershire sauce.
Mm.
Yeah, it's delicious just like that. Or you can put it on top of a, you know, if you're a meat eater, on top of a steak, which is great. Or even with a baked potato, it's delicious. But
that
I usually
sounds
like
so good. I never thought of putting Worcestershire sauce with mushrooms like that. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it definitely adds a great flavor. And almost like a sauce in a way, too. It creates like a sauce. So it's like, I put it on a baked potato, you know, put some butter on there, and it's so good.
I have a feeling my mom puts wine in with her mushrooms. Have you ever put wine in with it? That sounds like that could be a...
Yep, I've heard of people doing that also with like, you know, different, you know, some spaghetti sauces, or I wonder what type she uses. I should try that, if it's a white wine or...
Yeah, I think she just uses a very basic dry white wine or a vermouth or something. Just like ordinary, any kind of cooking wine, anything you would use for cooking.
Right, yeah. I'll have to try that out.
How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
I love fried green tomatoes, and I make my own breading. So I have it's this Roman spice. There's just so many different things in it, and that's like the secret ingredient into my breading for my fried green tomatoes. But if you have a big supply of tomatoes, it's definitely something that's quite delicious. Are you a fan of fried green tomatoes?
I am a fan of fried green tomatoes. I mean, I can't eat a ton of them, but I can definitely eat, you know, some when it's that time of year and they're...
Yeah.
I've been frying so much eggplant this year because we have more eggplant than we've ever had. And then I've been frying a lot of the yellow squashes.
Ooh.
So that's kind of been my fried thing for this summer. But yep, I've definitely, there have been other years where we haven't had as much of those things, so I've eaten more fried green tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great, because so many people, I'll like introduce it to them for the first time. You know, it's not something you know, that's, you know, on everybody's like first list to make.
I know, I was, when you first said it, I thought, should I have her explain this to listeners even more if they haven't seen the movie?
Yeah,
what they are.
Sure, yeah, I'd like to talk about it, and it, because cool. It's funny, because you don't think of a tomato being fried as anything like
you know, that's a good point. Yeah, it doesn't sound very yummy, does it?
Right, and tomato. I think it's the fact, because when you think of a tomato, it's like kind of squishy and watery, mm-hmm. but when the tomato is green, it's very hard. It's a hard consistency. So, you know, you cut it, you slice it up, and then once you bread it and fry it, it's almost like it's a meat. So many guys have, like, I've, you know, made them for my boyfriend before and some of my friends, and they're like, wow, I never thought this would be this good. And, you know, I'm surprised, you know, how much they like it. It's a good, like, hearty meal, I would say.
Now, how do you bread them? Do you dip them in anything, or you just put breadcrumbs on them, or?
I dip them in
egg. Do you have to salt them at all? It's been a long time since I've made fried green tomatoes, I suppose.
I just, a very simple process. I just slice them and, I do dip them in egg.
Oh, dip them in egg.
Yeah, I dip them in egg and then, you know, scramble the egg up, and I dip them in the egg and then dip them in the breading. I would think, though, if there's an issue with using egg for anybody, I think you could try to just put the breading, and they seem like, you know, because they are a little bit wet, that might work, just using, just dipping it right in the breading. I don't know once you fry it, though, if it would fall off. But hey, maybe I'll try that.
I'm thinking I should have dipped my eggplant in egg before I breaded it for my eggplant parmesan, now that you're saying that. Because I was having a problem. Yeah. The breading was falling off.
Oh, okay. So you, with your eggplant, you just dipped it in the breading?
Yeah. I just sauteed it in olive oil and just dipped it.
Oh.
I just kind of sprinkled the breading on top of it. Or dipped them kind of in the breading and kind of, I don't know what I did.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of messy, maybe. And there's breadcrumbs all over the bottom of the pan and all over the oven still.
Maybe try the egg next time and see how that works.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it. Because the recipe didn't call for breaded eggplant, but I just thought it would make it taste better. And it seemed like remembered making it that way before. So I was just like, oh, yeah. And I don't know. It kind of, I don't know. I'm waiting to taste it as soon as we're done.
Yeah, definitely.
You know how it goes. How about a favorite internet resource? Is there somewhere on the internet that you like to go, like a website or anything?
Well, I have, for my mushroom growing, mushroomvideos.com has like some tutorials there. And then fungi.com. Once again, that's Paul Stamets' website. And yeah, those two are just, they're great. I've learned a lot growing. I have also grown mushrooms from spores, you know, a spore syringe. Maybe we can talk about that a different time. But for the mushroomvideos.com, it really, you know, showed me ways to be sterile and how to do everything properly. So that's a good website. And then for my actual garden, I love the Farmer's Almanac.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. Now, is that like the farmersalmanac.com? Or is that the book itself?
I just buy the, you know, the from the store every year. Just, you know, the little the magazine. Mm-hmm. It's like a paperback.
Mm-hmm. Now, there seems to be like a bunch of them now.
Oh, I get the old the old Farmer's Almanac.
I was looking in the store one night, though, and there were like six different versions of the old Farmer's Almanac. Like, there was like a magazine, and there were like two or three different of just the regular style one, and I can't remember. It's like at the beginning of the summer, but I remember I was like, wow, look at all these different things.
Yeah. Wow.
But, yep. All right, ready for the final question? It's kind of a doozy.
Okay,
here we go. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Okay, I could talk so much about this. Here we go.
Excellent.
Right now, something I'm very big on. Well, you know, obviously so much waste, the plastics and like synthetic products that take so long to break down in our landfills. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, for instance, Garbage Island, and just there's so much pollution. So something that might fascinate people is that mushrooms can actually break down plastics and other synthetic material. The oyster mushroom can break down a disposable diaper that takes about 4 years to decompose, and it can break it down in 4 weeks. And other synthetic products like polyurethane that takes thousands and thousands of years to break down. There's this mushroom researchers found in Brazil that actually can break it down in 2 weeks. So what I would like to see in ACT is eco-vative design. And there are a few entrepreneurs that are working with this. It's replacing plastics and other synthetic products with mycelium, which is, you know, it works as a glue to like keep, you know, these molds together. And yeah, it can replace a lot of packaging material that is unnecessary and very wasteful and like a big pollutant. So if anyone wants to look that up, it's Ecovative Design.
Can you spell that for us?
Yes. ECOVATIVE and then design, DESIGN. And you can go to ecovativedesign.com and learn more about mushroom-based materials. And they're biodegradable, so it's very interesting, you know, the new wave of fungi in the environmental world.
I like that. Excellent. Okay, yeah. Cool. Wow, who would have thought? See, there's so many solutions, and people just kind of get locked in their ways, and I like that.
Yes.
Fascinating. Okay, I'm going to have to go to that website, Ecovative Design.
Yeah.
Okay, Tess, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden or dig their own spore holes?
I would just, you know, remind people that it's so rewarding to be able to walk, you know, outside or wherever you live on your balcony, even you can, you know, have potted plants, but it's so rewarding to, you know, watch something grow and you've done it yourself and then just create, you know, healthy meals from it. It's a feeling I can't even describe. It's just, it's so rewarding. So I would have to say that. Yeah.
I like that. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your expertise with us today. And I'm sure listeners are going to really like this interview. I know I did. I was just fascinated. I hope you hang on a little bit because I got to hear some more about the Peace Corps.
Oh, of course. And thank you for having me. I'm very glad to share, you know, my knowledge and as well learning from you today.
Oh, thanks. So, you know, at the end, if you don't want to, but I always ask, how do people connect with you? Like, do you want listeners to be able to reach out to you, or they could just reach out to me and I could pass along if anybody has a message? Would that be the best way to go?
Well, I am working on my own company. It's called Detroit Spore Company, and it's basically spreading fungi knowledge, the health benefits, and fungi in the environment. If they, you know, people want to learn more about, you know, their role in the environment and, you know, how they can help, you know, with our whole pollution situation. I'm on Facebook at Detroit Spore Co. And then my email is DetroitSporeCo@gmail.com. So It's just for fungi enthusiasts and sharing, you know, my slogan is reuniting mushrooms and mankind. And kind of just reminding people that, hey, you know, these aren't just little icky, squishy things. You know, they play a huge role in our ecosystem.
Excellent. That's a perfect way to sign off. Well, thank you so much. I hope everybody will go to DetroitSpore.com on Facebook and click like and reach out to Tess if you're interested in learning more about fungi and how they can reunite mushrooms and mankind.
Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to hearing from people.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.